StartupRad.io, your podcast and YouTube blog covering the German startup scene with news, interviews, and live events.
Welcome everybody, this is Joe from StartupRate.io, your startup podcast and YouTube blog from Germany. Today I do have another very interesting guest here who is the founder of the Startup of the Month by Frankfurt Forward, September 2020. Congratulations to Ramin. How are you doing?
Hi Jörn, I'm doing pretty fine, and you?
Doing great, thank you. We did a little bit talking up front, as always, and what was very interesting is your story. So basically, you studied astrophysics, you like to play chess, you like to ride motorcycle, and then you founded a legal tech. How did this happen? What did you do before you founded Nike Technologies?
Yes, sure. Let me go ahead and try to explain it. I started studying physics early on when I was in school, like in high school. I started at around was 16 and a half, 17 something. So I used to be a so-called Schülerstudent, a pupil student in the University of Frankfurt. And by the end of my school time, so when I was 19, I finished 3 semesters, and my so-called, in Germany we call it Nebenfach, Wahlfach, and that was astrophysics. So I did this early on, and during this time of I had the opportunity to also look into other fields, and I was particularly interested in cognitive linguistics. I took a look into some lectures and was pretty amazed by it. So, by the study of language, and maybe I should mention that my mother, she used to be a scientist in that field. She studied German and Roman languages, and so I got in touch with linguistics quite early. What I was really curious about is bringing different fields together, like the algorithms of mathematics into language. And I mean, that field already exists, it's nothing new. It's called computer linguistics. And in that particular field, there's like a field called natural language processing. It's the analysis of the written language, and by using algorithms from mathematical algorithms or something like that. So that was what I was really curious about. And the thing with physics is, now I explain why, from how do I get from physics to something like linguistics, is it's pretty easy to explain, because like you said, I was interested in that field, astrophysics. It was my specialty. I was really always curious about that. And in astrophysics, there are multiple models brought together to explain the phenomena in the universe, like thermodynamics, mechanics, and so on. And so that was mainly astrophysics, about bringing different models from different areas together and see if they could work. And that's what I tried to do for the language part, right? So I was pretty early trying to experiment, having some side projects to analyze language, trying to invent some algorithms on my own to analyze the written languages. And I had some projects on my own, was doing it for most of the time. Nothing really worked out until I came across to to meet some great guys, and they helped me actually taking it a little bit more serious, because they realized, okay, this one particular project is something you could maybe benefit from, and that was nice. If you like, I explain a little bit more detail, but I feel like I'm already talking like way too much.
Actually, you had me smile, because when you made the connection between linguists who study the structure and the words in order to understand language, and lawyers on the other side who try not to be understood, it kind of was antithesis for connecting those two. But nonetheless, that apparently worked for you. We are already at the point where you founded Nikes. Upfront, how did you get to this name?
It stands for Natural AI X, so Natural Artificial Intelligence X.
And the X means?
And X means it's a mystery. Like, you know, probably Google X Labs, you know, some sort of secret. I mean, okay, I found it pretty cool. So we registered that word as well. It's a registered trademark in the European Union, Canada, USA, and Switzerland. So it belongs to us.
I see, and the X means nothing. Okay, that's fine.
it has a meaning, like it's a mystery. Like I said, like it's like, you know. But yeah, well.
I'm sorry, didn't want to push you there. What was the basic idea? How you guys are started out, Nikes? What was the problem that pushed you towards setting up a serious company, kind of betting your financial wealth and future on a problem? What was the what was this problem, and how did you discover it?
So it came from the actual from the actual need. Okay, it's hard to explain the way I went. Maybe we talk about that another time. But I was I have a really good friend who gave an introduction to Markus Rohn, and that probably changed the whole game, because Markus is now currently is our advisor at Nikes. He managed to connect me with Karl Olbert, who's invested in Nikes, and Markus. Markus Rohn is who is that guy? He's the managing director of the private investment office of Rothschild & Co. Rothschild is they have like two main departments. One is the global advisory part, advising companies in M&A transactions whatsoever, and the other one is asset management, and that's where Markus is working. And he's such a great guy. He was talking to him, showed him what projects I work on, and he said, okay, this one is something that could maybe work out. And he's kind of a mentor, and I somehow made a good enough impression for him that he said, okay, look, I mean, I don't have money. I can't pay him. And, but he said, okay, you know what, I'm going to help you, to try this out. I'm going to connect you with a couple of people, he knows, and, he does know a lot of people. So he was kind of pushing this in the right direction, going into that legal direction, where the actual need for anonymization and pseudonymization is.
And why would you need anonymization and pseudonymization for any document?
That's a fairly good question, because you don't have the need, I don't have the need. So there is...
Let's back off a little bit, but there's someone who has a need for this, right?
Yes. That would be... Yes, there are law firms, who consultant companies who are working in the field of mergers and acquisition, M&A, who have to redact documents during that transaction. When you want to sell a company, you have to erase all the personal identifiable information, like names and so on, because we have this data protection here, right? Not only in Germany, but also in Europe. In Germany, it's the DSGVO, Datenschutzgrundverordnung. In Europe, it's the GDPR. And they make it... make it pretty expensive if you don't anonymize your contracts. If you have if you want to sell some loan portfolio, okay, you're a bank and you have want to sell that maybe it's a non-performing loan, so it's a portfolio of loans that perform quite bad. You want to sell it. But there are a lot of consumer information there, right? So when you're going to sell that, the investor who's going to buy that portfolio is not allowed to see that, for example, you or myself have like a loan, that bank. They don't need the personal information. They just need the size of the loan and whatsoever and the payment details, but they don't need our names. So
may I interrupt you here a little bit? So basically... there is a certain phase in an investment. It's usually called due diligence, where the investor checks all the data. So multiple investors will have a look into the loan documents in order to evaluate if they're real people, no fake loan whatsoever. Maybe even by anonymized data gauge the possibility of repayment of this loan. And that's basically the part where they have to see some of the documents, but they cannot see, for example, that I am one of the people whose loan is in there. So in this due diligence phase, they're checking all this data, and that's the point for which you guys are actually providing the anonymization of the documents, right?
Exactly. That's one application, one use case. So a pretty good summary. That's part of the due diligence when you prepare the data room and prepare all the documents. There is this part where you have to anonymize one. Another application is, which is pretty cool, is fast, it's cool. What's that word in English? Untersuchungsausschuss, when they have like, when the German government is trying to investigate a certain case, they have to, they get some information from, let's say, like the BND, Verfassungsschutz, and so on. But if those institutions provide the material, they have to anonymize that data as well due to data protection. So there's also the public sector, which has a high interest. Or the
that's an investigative committee, which can be frequently seen in the US because they are live broadcasted there.
Exactly. Okay. Great. Yeah. That. Thank you very much. When you have where else? Of course, knowledge management, another field. When you have like a contract, you don't want you wrote one contract as a lawyer and you want to use that for a different maybe case, or you want to use some patents, some blocks in that document. But due to Chinese walls, you're sometimes not even allowed to share that document within the same law firm, which makes knowledge management pretty hard. So even though some other colleague of yours, maybe from another city, from another location, worked on a similar case and you would like to use some specific data in there, it's not that easy. You have to redact or even anonymize the contract and then share it. So makes knowledge management way easier if you have like an automated solution where you get your contract, you put it into your database, and then everyone has access to it.
We may add, because not everybody here is from a corporate background, a Chinese wall is no physical wall you actually put up in a company. Don't get that wrong. It's a wall where on the one side, for example, one team in a bank is working with the buying side of a to buy a company, like for private equity company, and on the other side, another team, maybe somewhere else, is working on trying to sell the company, and they cannot share information. And this forbidding to share information of some kind, that is called a Chinese wall. I don't know why they call the Chinese wall. Maybe because the Chinese wall is the longest in the world, but that's the name given to it.
So you, as a consumer, have the right to DSGVO Section 15 to retrieve any information. Company where you're a customer are to retrieve that information. And so that's the biggest pain point for basically all companies. Let's say an insurance company where you have chat protocols, where you have emails, where you have contracts and all that stuff. And you have that right to know where your personal information is and retrieve those documents and those files. You can imagine if you have like an insurance company of millions of customers, that's a true nightmare. So if I go to my insurance company and say, I want to read off my emails and all the chat protocols, give that to me, they have to fulfill that. So in one case, they had 10,000s of chat protocol pages that they have to redact. So, and after 1 hour, they managed to redact 10 pages. And came back to the customer and said, okay, it's technically not possible with manpower to do that work manually, okay? You see, so what happens here? The companies tend to accept the fines that you get when you not complying with DSGVO, especially in the field of cartelrecht,
antitrust law. Yes, antitrust law. Yes, here we go.
The companies tend to say, okay, come on, we accept the fines because the fines aren't as high as the manual work we have to put in, right, to anonymize the data, which is kind of not how things should work, right? There should be the possibility, but until now, there's not. Now we're here. So law firms and consultant companies could use our tool to tackle that challenge in a technical way and benefit out of it. So on the one hand, their client on one side is happy because he doesn't have to pay the fines. Our client is happy because he has another option to generate revenues. And we are happy because we get a small cut from each page that is analyzed.
One question from my professional background. So basically, when you're working with tools, software within a bank, you cannot say, oh, that work, we just put it live. Basically, you have to test it. And in order to test it for real, you have to use some type of test data. Usually, the best is anonymized client data, so the people, the consultants or IT servicing companies or so on and so forth who don't belong to the bank have no right to see the client data. So you have to anonymize it again, and you want to have real data, the best or close to real data, to make sure your tool actually works and your software is not breaking down, especially for a bank. That would be horrible. So there are regulations in place, and my question would be, could you also do that with your tool?
Sure. Yeah, that's what we are here as well. And I would go even further. If you want to train your models in NLP, right? You need some data, some contracts. But the law firms, they are definitely not giving you like client based contracts, like some real life documents. They really don't do that. So what we make possible is that those law firms can generate those templates or those anonymized data for other software companies to make them even shareable. So After you have like a pseudonymized document, on one hand, software company benefits from it because it has access to a huge data set, and the law firm benefits from it since it gets tools that makes the legal work even more efficient. And that's like where legal tech is going right now, making the lawyers work as efficient as possible, because there are a lot of tasks out there that are repetitive. Best example is anonymization. Nobody actually studied for to look for names and addresses and whatsoever inside a document, redact it, and then upload it to the data room. It's really tedious, time-consuming, and annoying work.
When you've been talking about that, I was personally thinking about the people with the three-letter acronym agencies here or across the Atlantic. Actually, they also have to do a lot of redaction in everything they are doing. Would that be also a possible application of your tool?
Definitely. I already mentioned, like the Bundesnachrichtendienst BND in Germany, who does that.
Are they? I know, just between you and me and like 250,000 people who will listen to this, is the German version of the CIA, the Bundesnachrichtendienst, is it one of your clients?
No. not at the moment. I did a great talk with Brigitte Zypris. She tried to do some introduction to the Ministry of Justice and the Ministry of the Innenministerium.
The Interior Secretary or Ministry of the Interior.
As you can imagine, it's really hard to get through. It's really, even though you have some contacts, it's simply not enough. It takes a lot of time if you want to make business with some governmental institutions. You need a lot of time, and we haven't focused too much on them because time is something that you actually don't have as a startup. But to go back to your further question, of course, I mean, look at Andreas Scheuer's report. You heard about the Maut situation, the car fee that he wanted to enforce, and he didn't succeed, and he had to publish his report on his contracts between CTS Eventim, the German government, and the other party that was involved. And you can look out that report that's online. It's a redacted one. In just this one report is like 2,500 pages. So there must have been someone or even multiple people in that ministry who actually went through a 2,500 page document and had to redact the names and the personal identifiable information. I mean, wow, okay? Can you just imagine? Your purpose of life is redacting, of even for even a small period of time, is redacting pages. This is like the most tedious and painful work I probably did myself.
We may give a little bit background. There was in Germany, they tried to put tolls on all the roads for private cars in Germany, basically for all the trucks. They have to pay tolls using German roads, and they want to have it for private cars as well. And that was a no-go due to European law, because the Germans would get preferred treatment. But nonetheless, the person in charge signed already some contracts, and there was an investigative committee. And again, that's where you guys came in, maybe, or could have come in.
Yeah, could have. We didn't handle that case. I mean, but it was just an example for even the public sector where there could be technically interest. And yeah.
Very interesting. Now I do believe we understand a little bit what are you guys doing? I personally don't understand how you get from astrophysics to redacting documents, but that's a completely different topic. For me, since you're a Start About the Month Frankfurt Forward, I would be interested, especially if, since you are a Frankfurt guy, you were raised in Frankfurt and you studied in Frankfurt and Cologne, and part of your company is in Cologne, part of your company is in Frankfurt. What means Frankfurt for you?
Oh, it's my home city. Would you mind if I just elaborate the first question, because I'm sorry I didn't answer that in fully. I will come back to that question. What Frankfurt means to me, it's a personal one. From astrophysics to legal, I forgot the missing link. I used to work for a law firm as a working student. So back then when I studied physics, I needed to do any job to pay rent and stuff. And I'm sorry to answer your question. I didn't explain the missing link between legal and between legal astrophysics exactly, or mathematics in general. How did I come there? I used to work as a working student in a big international law firm, and it was there where I made my first contact into the legal world, and where I experienced the problems lawyers have. Even though I wasn't a lawyer, I was just a working student. I was like a paper boy, doing basic stuff, copying stuff, IT stuff,
delivering internal mails, the physical letters, the newspapers and stuff like that. Yep.
Yeah, like nothing too fancy. It was just something I could pay my rent and I could make a living out of it. It was a good time. It was a really good time, this is where I made my first contact into the legal world, and I talked to your lawyers, and I talked to talked about their pains, and I talked to people about my projects that I have, that I was doing on my own, like as in my free time, as for fun, doing this natural language processing stuff over there, and what is possible with that technology, what you could do. And so the things evolved, and that's maybe the missing link between physics and on one hand, and the legal world on the other hand, which is quite important to understand. But yeah, so and then again, timing was a big factor. I told you about my friend who made an introduction to my friend that now he's my advisor and friend at Rothschild & Co. And he is all the things came together. I mean, I did try out a lot of stuff before, like most of the stuff failed. That's like typical for founders, that they did try out a lot of stuff, try to monetize a lot of stuff, but fail. And this is one stuff I actually am most curious about, because the legal world is a pretty close society, I would say. They mainly work in the background. You probably don't know the biggest law firms in the world, but they are advising the big companies in the world, right? Not only doing transactions, but doing their legal work. I mean, right now we are getting advised by one of those big law firms as well. We are advised by CMS, Hasche Sigle, when the EQUIP program. So they have like a program to advising startups at a little bit reduced fee of what they usually take, and advising us in the legal fields. They're doing our contracts. And so I on one hand, I have the law firms as my clients. And on the other hand, we have a big law firm which helps us to negotiate, to build those contracts. And we as a client on our side then get a feeling what is most important in the legal world. And it's not that writing a contract is the most crucial part, but the actual advisory part, the legal advisory, so the strategic advisory, the experiences with different cases in the different fields, regarding IT, regarding IP, regarding whatsoever. And that's where they have a high expertise, and that's what I'm also really willing to pay for, that they actually advising us in those particular areas. What I really do not like to pay for is like the standardized contracts. I mean, nobody likes to pay for them because everyone knows how it works. But it's more of the advisory part, you know, taking a deeper look at what's the case here, what we're working on, and then writing some legal stuff around there. So yeah, that's that.
And now finally we get to the point, what means Frankfurt for you? Since we discussed upfront, you've been raised in Frankfurt, you studied in Frankfurt, then you also studied in Cologne, and now you have a company which is formally headquartered in Cologne, but you also do have a large presence here in Frankfurt. So what means Frankfurt for you?
So yeah, wanted to go back to that question. Good question. So I was raised in Bergen-Enkheim. That's part of Frankfurt, and it's my home city. You know, I grew up there, lived there for most of my time, for about 22 years. My parents still live there. A lot of friends are. Or at least, yeah, the most important, many important friends live in Frankfurt. So I still have a connection. It's not only that there are the big international law firms, the investment banks are located there, but also my family and friends, which means a lot, obviously. I mean, Cologne and Frankfurt, they are closely connected. I can take the ICE. It takes about an hour to get there, which is pretty nice. Our office here in Cologne, it's closely located to the central station, and then again in Frankfurt, we have that office, like you mentioned. We're located there in Reinvent Law. Reinvent Law is a co-working space, but also a network. So the members are primarily from the legal tech area, and they have a strong focus in connecting not only the members to each other, but also the members with huge companies. And so we are getting some leads from over there, and we are getting nice conversations over there. And we are quite flexible. If you want to work in the Cologne office or in the Frankfurt office, it actually doesn't matter. I mean, you can work from home as well. But yeah, that's that. Maybe we can talk about personal stuff as well. I really like to do that. You said in your material that your podcast is also it's for entrepreneurs, from entrepreneurs, you know, from founders to founders. Which is pretty nice. So what I always try to do, I had a talk here in Cologne with the Entrepreneur Club Cologne. I speak to other founders. I try to tell them a lot about my own failures, but also about the personal stuff. So if you have any specific question, I'm always up to answer it in an openly and most transparent way.
I usually do have a closing question which tells some about a person. I give you first a question and then I talk a little bit so you have time to think. If you could describe your life either as a book title, a movie title, or a combination of both, what would it be and why? Okay, that's the time Ramin actually has for his thinking. Guys, keep in mind we are available on Patreon, and make sure to like and subscribe our video here. Thank you very much.
The question is really hard. If we could talk about some other stuff in the meantime, because I really have to think about that. It's a good question.
For everybody who's watching this on YouTube or listening to the audio recording, actually we took here a break of about an hour, so Ramin had time to think.
Exactly. But maybe I can Okay, but maybe I can, maybe in the meantime, I can talk about some other stuff about founding a company in general and what it means personally on a personal level. Maybe that's...
Yeah, sure. Totally fine.
Because that's something people do not like to talk about, because in my, if you talk about them, like not before camera, but behind, you get the feeling that there are some patterns. And I'm talking about mostly the failing part, about the part of life, which is not so much talked about, because especially in these times where with LinkedIn and YouTube and especially Instagram, you have to, you know, make a, you have to make a good looking, like you just get followers if and attention if you're talking about your success, what you already achieved, what you managed to do in your long life. Oh my God, look at me! I'm so super fucking cool. I'm so amazing. And people do not talk about the failure part, but most of those people did fail a lot in their life, and as well on the personal level, and I did too. I think the best example I can give you is that my I have multiple good examples. Maybe I start with that one, that I was once in a hospital for about 2 weeks because I got the medics had a breakdown, a nervous breakdown, and it was not only a nervous one, but it has also like physical. Some physical stuff with it. I couldn't speak anymore and stuff like that because, and I was put into the hospital because I thought I had a stroke. I was, this is now two years ago. But, you know, being in the hospital, dragged with that ambulance, going crazy and people talking about what you might have, thinking that you have now a stroke is something that lets you rethink some decisions you made. And then lying there in the hospital for about 2 weeks, I was probably, oh my God, I don't want to be in the hospital anymore. After 2 weeks in a hospital stationary, it's, you know, it's the was really painful. And it's because I took my work really serious. I was, I mean, what I do is fun and stuff and I like to do it, but I tend to be really extreme in what I do. And one of those results might be that you suffer physically in an unhealthy way, you know, not in a healthy way. This is probably something. Another thing is that I lost my girlfriend. My relationship ended after 10 years of relation, after 10 years of having that relationship. That's probably the biggest loss of my life. And why is that? I mean, of course, I cannot explain in detail why a relationship between two humans might end. It's way too complex in an interview to explain that. But of course, one main reason is that if you're founding a company, you're so focused on that work that you forget about other stuff. You prioritize differently. And even though I loved my girlfriend back then, pretty much I always needed to go forward and do my working stuff. So I didn't took care about the relationship itself. I didn't took care about me and the relationship. So I was bringing a lot of anger, a lot of stress, a lot of stuff into that relationship, which even after 10 years, you think you become immortal. You know, you don't ever think about that it might end. You have, I'm 29 years old, so we came together when I was 19. I met her 2 years ago, so she was 15, I was 17 when we met. She is the love of my life, and I lost her because I one of the reasons is that I had different priorities due to the founding, and which hits pretty hard if you think about it. I mean, I can talk about the stuff openly. It's not like that it, it's consequently always, if you found a company, that's one of the consequences you have to be afraid of, like being in the hospital, using your girlfriend, struggling financially. That's definitely not the case. Okay, there are success stories out there. People, most of the people or some people doing quite fine when they found a company, they don't have to feel that. But that's one thing how it could end. And maybe I'm on the spectrum on the extreme side. Like I lost a lot of stuff. I lost friends as well. Biggest loss, my girlfriend, obviously. But it's something that could happen. And so you have to, even though you're excited about what you do, and even though it's really stressful, and I had existential crisis, I had anxiety, anxiety issues and all that stuff, brought all that stuff into that relationship, which is not good, and to other relationships as well, friendships and so on. So even though it might look like on one hand that what I do is quite cool and amazing and maybe even successful in it, it's just one side of the medal, you know. Most people just show the first place that they achieved an award and not the blood that is behind, because it's unpleasant. It's nothing too fancy, right? It's nothing you like to talk about. Most people don't like to talk about it. I like to talk about it because I want to prepare people. I'm not, like I said, I don't want to scare people. That's actually not what I want to do. But it's not always as it's nice and easy as it looks like. And since I heard a lot of other founders listening to their talks about all that bullshitting they're doing, about all that they're so excited about what they do that they just talk about the success, and they don't talk about the fails, as particularly the mischoices they made when they went into another contract with some contractor, about their personal life, about anything, which gives like a pretty bad, you get a false impression of what founding means. Like I said, most people I met, and I talk like most other entrepreneurs I meet and talk about, they have not the exact same experience as I did, but something similar. And that's what I always, if you have any question there, feel free to ask.
No question, but it's always an interesting perspective because, as I say, many people get the impression founding is, I say, one day I start a company, next day I start a company, and 1 year later I'm a millionaire. It's not that easy.
Yeah, I mean that's maybe too obvious, but even just surviving, founding a company and surviving is probably the one of the hardest things you could do. It's not about the money. It's about paying everyone around. You know, I have people that work together with me, and they don't live with the love I give them to you. Okay. And they, oh my God.
Just imagine, to wrap it all up, just imagine you could be for 1 week the CEO of any company in the world. Which one would you choose and why?
Which one would I choose? To be the CEO of one? Oh, wow. Good question. Never thought about that. From another company, okay? Now I'm thinking, okay, well, would it be curious to be one of the bigger companies, a tech company? I mean, like the simple questions like Amazon, Google, and Facebook. Okay, I'm not quite sure if I would like to be a CEO of that company, even for a day. That's like way too short. I don't have the insight to actually do some stuff over there for a day. But okay, what I mean, I'm actually fancy about DeepMind. DeepMind is now integrated into Google. If that counts as a separate company, That's nice. Then I like the X Labs of Google, which are pretty amazing as well.
Yes, of course. DeepMind counts as a separate entity. Therefore, thank you very much. It was just a pleasure talking to you. Thank you. Very interesting interview. And I do believe we'll make a teaser with all your laughters and my laughters in between, because we had a lot of fun here in this interview. Thank you very much, and bye-bye.
Thank you very much, Jörn, for the interview. Thank you for asking.
That's all, folks. Find more news, streams, events, and interviews at www.startuprad.io. Remember, sharing is caring.